I think the whole team looks trimmer. Anybody notice? Do you guys think that?
Very just fair.
Generally trimmer and quicker, more Brandon Vogel-like. Did you guys notice that? Where Brandon joins us now. You joined right in time. We were just describing the perfect chiseled body type, and then you disappear. And I don't think it's coincidence, man. What you been eating?
I think it is a coincidence. I can't say I have noticed the trimness yet, but what I have noticed, and I guess at my age, the thing I'm most envious of is the flexibility. Because some of the stuff they're doing, I haven't seen a whole lot in you know, a decade plus of kind of watching football practice clips. So we'll see if that translates in any such way.
The yoga stuff, the reach thing. What is that called? That's like that's an stretching. Actual yoga move. No, it's a yoga move. It's like the
downward dog.
No, although maybe they have done that. I don't know. No, but they're incorporating yoga, like while they're in pads, as part of, you know, like the pregame stretch that everybody used to do, where it's
where
like
you go where one, you're touching two, your toe. Three.
Well, yeah.
And you're right. you're on your legs, you're on one leg, the other leg's up in the air.
Yeah, stuff like that. Chris froze in such an epic way right now on the YouTube stream. That is just amazing.
Mark, to your point, I'm not sure that the team, from what I've seen, I mean, I'm not down there at practice every single day, but from what I've seen on social media, like, I don't think they look more physically impressive. Like, think about what Garrett Nelson looks like and what he looked like at Pro Day. He looks like Thor. Like that's how the Husker football team was built before. They just look, in my eyes, more like what the rest of the Big Ten looks like in terms of what their football players look like. It feels like they're more in line with what the rest of the Big Ten is doing. It's not a more trim. They're not more cut up. They just look more like what I expect a modern college football player to look like, if that makes sense.
I saw less fat dudes, is what I'm saying. I just did. Just saw less fat dudes. Like, you saw some fat dudes last year. There's just not as many of those.
No, you know, they're leaned
up. By the way, that's a relative term. It's a relative term.
Listen, you and I, most of us, except for Elijah, we're all at a certain point in our 40s. And given the weekend, we can all fall into the fat dudes category. So we're talking about our own once in a while.
I'm getting after it tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow's your day.
You watch.
Vogues, I want to get your thoughts here on, and Elijah and I started chatting about this. You were a big baseball card guy, right? Growing up.
I wasn't the hugest, but I did definitely, I mean, it was what you did. There was like one card shop in Alliance, Nebraska in our county, and you'd go there and definitely, you know, subscribe to Beckett at some point in my life.
Yeah.
So I was that big, I guess, of a card person. I kind of haven't really revisited it since then. Like, I've got all those cards are back in my parents' house somewhere. I'm not quite sure where.
Well, I bring it up. You remember the Donruss Diamond Kings, right? Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in search of the Frank Thomas Diamond King. It was really awesome. It was like some oil painting on a card. And at one point, it was worth $25, and I felt great about myself. And then it's now $2. And then you had the future stars for Topps. I remember my Bo Jackson rookie. And that's what we kind of saw last night at Haymarket. We saw the Diamond Kings with Erstad and Comine and Gordon. And then you had the future stars, if they so choose, to be a part of Nebraska in the hot dog line being mobbed. And it's just interesting. And Nebraska has done – the fan base has done such a great job of – showing up and showing out to voice their support for the baseball team over the years. But it almost felt like baseball. Oh yeah. You're opening the Big Ten last night, but everyone's here to see the recruits.
It was an interesting night. And, you know, I heard a little bit of the opening segment. You guys kind of talking about that. And that's one that does feel like a little bit unique to Nebraska. Like, you take those guys to a baseball game, I'll just select a school randomly, USC. What happens there? What's the reception like? And I'm not saying it's better, it's worse, But, you know, obviously talking about somebody like Dylan Raiola, and, you know, if you want that, if you want kind of to be the guy that everyone in the baseball stadium knows that you're there before you're even a Husker, it's going to be tough to replace that. That said, you could also look at it the other way. Be like, I just want to go do my thing. I'm not going to be the toast of LA. There's some other famous people in LA, I've heard. So, you know, you can see the upside to both ways, but this is what Nebraska can offer. And strangely enough, like I said, I don't think this happens a lot of other places, a baseball game. I mean, in the SEC, you'd get it a little bit, but a baseball game is an interesting way that it can be a showcase for Nebraska football recruiting because of Husker fans.
There's a fine line between showing affection and then being like the clingy stalker girlfriend. You know, that you don't want to cross that threshold. You know,
no, you don't. You don't want to wear. You don't want to get too much of a preview of like, oh, this. Would this be what it was like if I came here? Could I never go anywhere? So
you guys are both worried about the restraining order, aren't you?
I know, right? But there's something slightly intoxicating about the stalker ex-girlfriend, right? Just a little bit?
Yeah, she's got wonderful eyes.
Yeah, if you're codependent, it's great. You know? You got to dive into the psychology of these kids. Think about it. Yeah, that's I put it this way. I would be shocked at this point, right? Not trying to prognosticate. If, like, would Raiola really be doing all this and then just not go to Nebraska? I'm just almost, that would almost be like trolling Nebraska in some way.
Well,
right?
I brought this up on the show this week.
Throwing the bones. Like, he's on a Georgia podcast talking about what's next. Did y'all see that?
I didn't see that.
I missed that. Tell me more about the Georgia podcast.
Like a Georgia fans podcast, and they're talking to him, and he drops, not so subtly, I mean, it's kind of subtle, but they're asking like, hey, well, when are you thinking about coming back to Georgia? I know we're going to Nebraska this weekend. When are you coming back to Georgia? And he's like, yeah, well, you know, a little more, we'll see. You know, I'm going to go to Nebraska, have fun, and right now really worried about what's next or something like that. Like dropping these little,
how I'm mobbed like, am I going to be at Haymarket?
I'm like, if he's 24 hours, I'm it's over. So I don't know. It just like, he's not going to USC and doing things like that. He's not going to Georgia and like running with the bulldog or anything. I just, right.
Well, think of Georgia and USC are blue bloods of football. They have really great coverage. But to Vogel's point, I mean, there's a lot to do in L.A. The star power in L.A. is very real. And football, even when they're winning, isn't always on the radar. Georgia, you've just cranked out two national championships. Dylan's not the first five-star you've had there this week. They've got 75 of them on the roster. That's the reality and difference right now is Nebraska's a program that doesn't need to take a backseat to anybody. But when it comes to high-profile recruits, you don't often get them. I mean, think of the turnout for Micah Parsons. And that was a Friday Night Light deal. So it's a context thing because of the high-profile and – how often it does or doesn't happen here. And that to me is it with why the reaction's been, you know, if Matt Rhule keeps doing this, all right, say they land, let's be conservative and say they get 7 out of the, what's the number, 30 kids that are here this weekend. That'd be awesome. And you can mix and match 3 to 5 stars, but say you have a decent haul. And I would say that number is a pretty good haul. The next time around, if Rhule keeps doing his thing and they win and they've got a plan and it works and there's development, you might just start reeling in 4 and 5 stars at the rate Georgia and, dare I say, USC have been doing for years. I mean, there's that opportunity with this, but this is like the first test case of not a five-star coming to Lincoln, but this many five and four stars with the new coaching staff. It's kind of a perfect timing moment for Nebraska.
I think it is, you know, and I think you kind of hit on what I view as maybe the central dichotomy here in this Raiola recruitment. If we've got a serious three of Georgia, USC, Nebraska, like they're all brand names. They're all, you know, powerful traditional football programs. But beyond that, I think there's a pretty big difference here. It's almost like when you look at the talent that's already on hand at USC and certainly at Georgia compared to Nebraska, where you look at where they've been, you know, just recently the past 5-6 years. And I know USC prior to last year kind of wasn't hitting on all cylinders, but it just like, for me, the central issue or kind of central question comes down to like, what do you want? And we can think about this in LA terms and like movie terms. Do you want to be in the next Marvel movie? Because some people really do, and it's great. It's kind of like plug and play. You're one of many. That's Georgia USC. Or do you want to be in kind of the quirky, you know, sort of original idea type of movie? Do you want to be in Everything Everywhere All at Once? Just won the Oscar kind of out of nowhere. But that's not, you know, the next Avengers movie. It's just, and you can get the appeal of both of them. It's just that we don't know which way he might go at this point.
Well, and Brandon, I don't know how to compare this to movies, but a point I brought up earlier this week, which I'm still going to stay with, is like, if Dylan were to go off to USC after this recruitment, once you come to Lincoln and play a football game, you are public enemy number one. Like, if you are going to a different future Big Ten school, there is going to be some animosity at Memorial Stadium should USC come to town.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That there's going to be a crossover between these two properties. To take it back to twisted movie metaphors. That's one where it's definitely a factor. It'd be hard for me to take it into account if I were fortunate enough to make such a decision with no real bad answer, of course. Like playing football at USC, Georgia, or Nebraska has the potential to be a pretty great thing. So, I'm a little bit shocked. I haven't even processed the fact that, USC is in the Big Ten in a year from now.
Yeah, just to kind of reset it maybe for folks that don't follow recruiting as much. And listen, there it's what, like 24 players, 25 players on unofficial visits this weekend, headlined by Raiola. There's another five-star receiver that's in town. So it could be like one of those watershed kind of moments for Nebraska recruiting and for Rule in general. Brandon, meanwhile, there was football practice that opened up this week. That started on Monday, and they were in pads quite a bit. Some interesting little nuances, and I'm just wondering some things that maybe stood out to you and what they could foretell. But like, you know, they don't like to throw the quarterbacks. The rule says he doesn't want them throwing like indoors. He wants them throwing outside only, just to get used to the wind. That's one thing. And then just the general pace of practice. There was some talk about how the players are just like, wow, this is like, I'm pretty tired. Like, we really got after it. Just the general pace is serious. What stood out to you just with kind of seeing Matt Rule's operation in action for the first time?
Yeah, the throwing piece of it, and I guess this is also kind of applicable to special teams, it seems. But the throwing piece of it caught my attention specifically. You know, we talked about this on this show last week about the Trev Alberts, Tom Osborne, Matt Rule sit down, and Tom Osborne, you know, for a long time, I don't know when he first said these things, but I've heard them multiple times. He said them, you know, to me in times that I've had the opportunity to interview him about some stuff. You know, talking about the value of a rushing yard being greater than a passing yard, and specifically knowing you've got to be able to throw in the wind. And I was kind of like, you know, makes sense once you say it, but I'm just like, is that why Rule's doing this? Was this how it was, you know, at Baylor? Did Temple even have an indoor facility when he was there to give him the choice? So that kind of caught my attention. It's just like, oh, that's interesting. I think the biggest thing was, though, and I wasn't at Thursday's practice, of course, but our entire team was, and looking at their updates and just talking to them, you know, individually, like the way that they structured this, where, you know, the groupings weren't necessarily by position at all times, and everybody kind of did everything, struck me as, you know, at this stage, and I'm sure you dial it in as you continue to go along, but they're just kind of teaching everybody football, which might seem a little bit reductionist. You know, if you're like, well, these guys are Big Ten football players now, they should know some of this stuff. Well, even if that's the case, if that's kind of somebody's starting position on that matter, well, isn't it interesting then that they're saying, no, we're kind of going to take this back? Like, it was almost like what you would do with a youth football camp when they have those. It's like, hey, the value here is in you learning everything. Learn the technique. You're going to run the drills no matter if – I mean, you're not going to have your offensive linemen working on their five-step drops, of course. But largely, everybody kind of went through a little bit of everything. And that was intriguing to me.
Hmm. Brendan Vogel with us, managing editor, HailVarsity.com and magazine, weekend edition of Hail Varsity. You're just catching this or new to it. Streams on Saturday. YouTube page for Hail Varsity is where you can watch it, can make some comments in the stream. We'll get to some of those here in a little bit.
One of those we have to get to. Sorry.
Chris. Yeah, no, we'll do that.
One of them is Chris. It's 40 out. Is it cold in the studio? Because you have the wool cap on.
Let's just be honest. I have not combed my hair yet this morning.
Okay.
Not sure you can call it a studio either.
It's the living room slash kitchen.
Fair point.
So, Vogues, are you worried about the number of offensive linemen in spring camp? Where are they at with like 10 scholarship, 14 overall? Does that concern you? I think they'll find 7 they like. But you need more. You need more, and maybe you go shopping this spring. I don't know, or May more specifically. But that's been commented on. Not only the lack of offensive linemen at Pro Day for Nebraska, but just your offensive line numbers. What's your interpretation there, other than the obvious of, man, they're thin this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, going into spring practice, like we all kind of knew that Matt Rhule effectively said the numbers aren't where they'd want them to be for that group. And obviously you can't change that now. Like, and even in May, you're going to get 2 weeks. And I'm guessing Nebraska will take some swings at that position in the transfer portal. But as we've talked about before, it's really competitive for kind of offensive linemen who are experienced and a little bit ready made. So, am I concerned about it at this point? It just kind of is what it is. Now we show up on Tuesday and they're like, unfortunately, this guy got a little dinged up. He's going to be out for the rest of it. Like, you just don't have a lot of wiggle room for that. So that's where you get into a little bit of this is kind of dicey territory because you went in knowing it was going to be a little bit dicey just with the numbers. So that's one of those things where it's tough to address. You've got the May window, and that's kind of about it. If you get through all of these 15 practices and say, yeah, we need more numbers right now.
Are you following the saga of Micah Mazzucca down at Florida, Brandon? Because that seems really interesting to me. He's in the transfer portal, at least he says he is, and then he deletes a tweet and he hasn't entered his name in the portal. But it seems like not all is well down in Gatorville with Micah Mazzucca.
Yeah, it definitely came up in our Hail Varsity Slack discussions. That's kind of where Nebraska is at. Anytime, and I think given that they've landed some guys from Florida, you're like, oh, interesting. But really, just kind of been an interesting offseason in Gainesville, which surprises me a little bit. You know, I think a lot of Billy Napier is the head coach, and you can always expect some attrition with a coaching change. But I've been a little bit surprised they've landed in the headlines specifically for transfer reasons as often as they have.
Yeah, yep. And that's the kid that was at Baylor that Nebraska was a finalist for when he was going to – well, finalist. And he was considering coming to Nebraska, ended up choosing Florida. Who knows? Maybe he'll reconsider and come back. But I want to say, too, I believe when Riley took over, weren't they down – it might have been in the spring, but just from memory, I thought they were – I thought they only had like 8 scholarship offensive linemen at one point, 8 or 9. Does that ring a bell? Like they were really depleted and then they had to somehow add to it. I could be wrong there. I know that was the case with receiver, and I want to say offensive line was really low too.
Yeah, I don't recall if it was ever that low. I'll have to go back and look at the kind of that initial recruiting class for Riley and staff, because I mean, at that point, you really couldn't do anything. Transfers couldn't play right away. What are you going to do other than kind of look to the junior college ranks in that first recruiting class? But yeah.
There, you know, some interesting comments too from Marcus Satterfield and Tony White. Tony White, the defensive coordinator. The thing he emphasized more than anything, and it might explain sort of what we were talking about earlier, where about having, you know, players practice all kinds of like different types of positions and go through different types of drills, is White kept coming back to mentality, right? He said that word probably 12 times in his media session, where that's what they're focused on right now is mentality, mentality, mentality. And they said a couple things that just warmed the cockles of my heart, where he's talking about, hey, we need to be intentional. And then I can't remember what the term was, but something that talked about really like dominating your contact or something like that. Like
dominant contact.
So it appears what they're really emphasizing, which is great because the sport is tackle football, is like collisions and winning those collisions and not ignoring the fact that that's what football like is. And that's what they're really focused on right now. And because of that, he called out a couple guys, Malcolm Hartzog, of being a guy that they're moving around and they're just so impressed with his, how intentional he is when he's out on the field. And then they also announced John Bullock, who's a kid out of Creighton Prep, walk on.
He's fun. He's a good ball player.
Yeah, good athlete. Played a lot on special teams last year, but I think he had some sort of injury. And they moved him down from secondary to linebacker. So we're starting to see some of that too, some of the position changes. Anything on that front, Brandon, what we heard from Tony White and or some of the position changes and or the guys that he was calling out?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that jumped out to me was, you know, you mentioned the word mentality became a little bit of a mantra in that first practice media session with Coach White. And that also strikes me as just an observer, as a little bit of music to my ears, because when I think about it, every football coach, I think, knows the importance of identity. The difference becomes how fanatical are you about it? And, you know, let's think back about it. Like, I mean, it's tough for me to come up with an example off the top of my head. When's the last time where we could just sit around the four of us having a conversation and say, Nebraska's offense, you know, it can do this, this, and this, but it is this. Even defensively, can you do that? You know, for me, you maybe have to go back to 2009, 2010, which even then, like, I don't remember kind of having the catchphrase, for lack of a better term, of something like dominant contact to even hang your hat on. It was just, well, Bo's a defensive guy. And Ndamukong Suh and Jared Crick and those guys up front are really good. And oh, by the way, you've got a school of sharks in the secondary who you've kind of assembled from traditional recruiting and the junior college ranks. And the identity was just, oh, they're really darn good. They're giving up like 10 points a game. But you know, here at the start of a new coaching staff, you're trying to like establish that and set it out from the beginning. So merits watching. It's the sort of thing that, like I said, a lot of coaches talk about it. I think the difference is of being how fanatical are you about it? And then the ultimate difference becomes, like, do you see it on Saturdays?
Dude, I'm down with that school of sharks analogy. That is great.
I love that secondary. Gomes, Haig.
Well, yeah,
that was a good secondary. And that's, Fonzie.
Honestly, the 3-5-3 or the 3-3-5. What is it?
3-3-5.
Little peso flashback, Kranek.
Well, they almost ran like a 3.
It's sort of the idea. But that's sort of the idea with it, right? Is to have just a lot of moving parts, little feeding frenzy kind of on the second and third level. I like that.
Vogues, what's coming up here, bud, for you with Hail Varsity?
Yeah, so we've still got plenty from the first week of spring practice that we're kind of working through and putting out on the site throughout the weekend. And then we'll go straight back into Tuesday. So now the open availability feeding frenzy for football practice now. So that's been good. Had a great video of the jersey retirement ceremony that's up on our YouTube page now.
Yeah.
So if you weren't able to catch that, Jolie Peel, who works with us, did a great job with that video. And we'll have baseball and softball, you know, at the end of the weekend, and then it's kind of continues to be full steam ahead on the football front. And the yearbook discussions have already started too, so that'll be behind the scenes and a ways away, but the plate's filling up a little bit.
Well, enjoy your weekend, man, and thanks for jumping on. Good to chat some ball this morning.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There he is.
Thanks, Brandon. I was just saying, 8-4 last night, Nebraska over Illinois. Mm-hmm.